According to the National Center for Drug Abuse, over 165 million Americans ages 12 and up are currently abusing drugs or alcohol. Of those 165 million Americans, there is a mom, dad, sister, brother, wife, husband, son, daughter, or grandparent praying and pleading that they would stop. Addiction is a subject most people don't like to talk about and is kept behind closed doors. But the Finding Hope podcast will bring light to the subject and give families that are living in shame, guilt, hopelessness, fear, worry, and anger tools and education to find strength, peace, happiness, joy, and hope. Hello, I'm Amy LaRue, Finding Hope Coordinator for Hope is Alive Ministries and your host for this Finding Hope podcast. At Hope is Alive, our mission is to radically change the lives of drug addicts, alcoholics, and those who love them. We do this through our intentional next level sober living homes and faith-based support groups for the loved ones of addicts called Finding Hope. Thank you for joining us today. I want to remind you about our upcoming Finding Hope retreats that are hitting the road this year. We saw a huge impact in taking these amazing retreats to new locations last year. And we thought, why stop there? So we're headed to Tennessee, California, Nebraska, Texas, and Florida. And finally, we're going to host a very special one here in Oklahoma just for wives. This year's theme is Restored Hope. So be sure to register and get more information from the link in the show notes, fhretreat.com. But I'm back here today with Ms. Darcy Stevens about a tough topic, right? Especially for those of us that have someone in recovery. One of the biggest fears, I think, Darcy, we're just going to jump right into it. Are you okay with that? Okay. Is that word that starts with an R, relapse. And I know that's one of the biggest fears that we all have. Once they get, maybe they get to rehab and then they take that next step to sober living. It's like, okay, are they going to relapse? Like, what's going to happen? And to be honest with you, Darcy, if I can just take everyone back 10 years ago, when I remember dropping my husband off at his rehab, I knew nothing, absolutely nothing about addiction. So that might be you right now. And I just want you to know it's okay. I have learned a lot over the last 10 years. But I remember dropping him off and the case manager that came in, he was all bubbly and all, and I was like, I'm not very bubbly right now, but good for you, dude. But he just looked at me nonchalantly and said, so how many times has your husband been to rehab? And I was like, how many times? Plural? And I probably looked like a deer in the headlights. I was like, this is his only time. I truly thought at that, my mindset at that time was, if he goes to rehab, he's going to be fixed, right? This is going to fix him. He's not going to drink anymore. And we're just going to continue on our happy life. And he's like, oh, and that guy said to me as a scared little wife there, I went to rehab 15 times. And I was like, what? And so I'm so grateful, though, that I had just learned about Finding Hope and started to get plugged into that community because I didn't know I needed it as much as I did need it. And hearing that, and like, I didn't even probably even know what the word relapse was at that moment. I was just dropping my husband off for them to fix him. Fix him. He's drinking too much. Fix him. And I think sometimes other people might have that perspective. You know, so he went, he did the thing, and then he did move into a sober living and was doing really well. And, but not short, about 5 years later, he had celebrated 5 years of sobriety. And I started just, and I was in a different place. And I started to feel like, started to see some signs, him like distancing himself, that kind of stuff. Him not taking care of himself as well. And all these little things, I was like, something's off, you know? And there's a difference of being off. Like, we can have bad days. And I tell people that all the, a bad day doesn't mean a relapse. Let me say that again. A bad day does not mean a relapse is happening. I have bad days. You have bad days. Everybody has bad days. And our loved ones can have bad days. But it's important to have that community through these bad days, right? Yeah. To mm-hmm. be able to say, hey, I'm really scared. He just lost his job. He's going to relapse. And my husband did lose jobs. He didn't relapse through any of those job losses. But come 2020, and when I started seeing those signs, I just kept praying, Lord, if this relapse has happened, just show me it. Mm-hmm. If it has not, give me peace about it. Mm-hmm. And so through that, I was doing laundry. I found a receipt.
Yeah.
And I had my answer. Mm-hmm. God answered that prayer. Was it the answer I wanted? No.
Yeah.
But it was an answer. Mm-hmm. And so he answered that prayer, saw that receipt. And because of finding hope and my own journey in recovery, I was able to process that relapse in a healthy way. Mm-hmm. And old Amy would have wanted to take a picture of that receipt and make him sweat mm-hmm. all day long.
Yeah.
But new healthy Amy was like, no, we're going to have an adult conversation about it and see, you know, after the kids go to bed. Mm-hmm. And we did. And it was hard conversation. But I had my boundaries. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about that here in a little bit. I had my boundaries. And I asked him to leave because that was one of my boundaries. Like, if I don't feel safe at my house or what's going on, you can't be here.
Right.
And so my boundary was, if I don't, if you're, oh, you screwed me up. I'm going to go back a little bit. Okay. So I found that receipt mm-hmm. and I wanted to, old Amy wanted to just text it to him and make him sweat all day on it, mm-hmm. which he probably wouldn't have. He probably would have come right home, but I really wanted to. But new healthy Amy, because of finding hope, I knew I needed to approach him in a healthy way and a healthy way for myself mm-hmm. in that as well as for him.
Yeah.
And so that evening after the kids went to bed and we sat down and just had an adult conversation. And my boundary was, if you're drinking, you can't be at home. Because if I don't feel safe, he can't be at home. And I know everybody's boundaries are different. And we mm-hmm. talk about that. My boundary is to protect myself and my well-being. Mm-hmm. And so that night, I'll never forget, he said, well, where am I supposed to go? And old Amy, fixer Amy, would have been like, well, you can go to this, do that. And I mm-hmm. said, that's not for me to figure out. That's for you to figure out.
Yeah.
And he did. And, you know, he left and he did what he needed to do and found a place. One thing I was really proud about him, and this doesn't always happen, and I know that, I also knew it wasn't my job to call his mom and dad to say, hey, Shane relapsed. Mm-hmm. That wasn't my job either. And he said, I will call my parents. Mm-hmm. I said, okay.
Yeah.
And he did. He owned it, which I know that's not everyone's story.
Right.
I just sharing that it was part of our story. And he also later got to FaceTime the kids. And something that he said is, it wasn't your mom's fault I did this. Mm-hmm. It's not something you did. It's something I wasn't working my program. Mm. And so, but I know not every relapse is like that.
Right.
And you're going to share your story here in a minute too. But because of that relapse, we hate that word.
Yeah.
It's fearful because mm-hmm. even a relapse can then lead to death, right? Mm-hmm. And we know that and we've seen it.
Yeah.
Just yesterday, yeah. I got that phone call. But he, because of that relapse, he's actually has a stronger program now than he did before the mm-hmm. relapse.
Yeah.
And he's about to, one day at a time, but he's about to celebrate 5 years again.
Yeah.
Does that give me a little bit of fear and anxiety? Yes, mm-hmm. because here we are again, about to hit this big milestone of 5 years
yeah.
again. But relapse can happen. Yeah. And I'm just going to share this statistic, and
yeah.
then I want you to share your experience with relapses. So according to the National Institute of Drug Abuse, statistics indicate that anywhere from 40 to 60% of people with addiction will experience a relapse, which is so high. And like I said, when I dropped him off at rehab, I didn't even know the word relapse. I just thought I was going to fix him. And I mm-hmm. think many times, many of us have that mindset. Mm-hmm. That's why it's so important to be a part of this community.
Yes.
And to be a part of people who understand. Because when my husband had that relapse, he was a part of that 40 to 60%, right? When he had that relapse, I mean, this is a God thing. Like, finding hope was the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was leading it. And you think, well, Amy is a leader. Why did your husband know? Yes. I went in and I said, today we do a number activity. I said, today, guys, I'm a two. Mm-hmm. And I openly shared about his relapse and how I was feeling because I had a safe place. My friend, I called her after it happened and I lost it after he left, guys. I held it together during it, but then I completely lost it. Mm-hmm. And I allowed myself to cry through that. And we're going to talk through that a little bit about feeling through the relapses. Mm-hmm. But she was just there to pray. She didn't understand what I was going through. But at my Finding Hope meeting that night, they did. And they prayed with me. They supported me. And I say I came in as like a two or a three, but I left probably like a six or a seven because they helped fill my cup. You know, I could feel God's presence in that. And that no matter if he got back into the path of recovery or not, I knew I was going to be okay, that God was going to take care of me and the kids. And I had this community that would support me through it.
Yeah.
So share a little bit about your story with relapses.
Okay. So I, like you, was a wife who was like, oh, he's going to rehab. Mm. He's going to fix him. And had a plan. We had a plan. He went to treatment and then door to door, which means he went straight from treatment into sober living. And I was like, he's going to be fixed. Mm. Like, everything's going to be okay. No relapse. No R word is going to be spoken. Well, he is a chronic relapser, I will say that. He was in the program. He went to treatment and then went into Hope is a Life home and was in the house for, he went into May and then February he relapsed. Mm. And there was always an excuse with it. The first time was my fault because.
Your fault?
Yeah.
He blamed you?
Yeah. He blamed me because I didn't want him to come home. He wanted to come home and I wouldn't let him. So his resentment is what caused him to relapse. But of course, because I started attending Finding Hope, I knew that it wasn't my fault. And,
did you feel like it was a little bit though?
Not really.
Okay, good.
No. Yeah. Because I mean, to remember, my mom went to treatment center after treatment center and after treatment center never got sober. And so, I wanted something different and I got help for me.
Yeah.
After he was getting help, you know, we've talked about that. I waited till he was okay and started going. But I knew, like, if I would not have started attending Finding Hope, I 100% would have thought it was my fault. Mm. Like, oh, it's because he could have come
home. You would have believed those lies he was telling you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I knew that it wasn't, that he was just using that as an excuse. So he had to move out of the house, out of the Hope is a Life house for about, I think, a week until he could pass a UA to get back in. He went back in and he stayed for six more months. He didn't leave because he had a relapse, but he was ready to come home. And I, you know, said, okay, come home, but you have to do this. We were launching, Hope is Alive was launching their online program.
Yeah.
So I said, you can come home as long as you do the online program. And he did. He completed that and he hit a year sober and relapsed within 2 weeks. And, always an excuse again. Oh, it's because I'm missing. He stopped going meetings. He had been going to meetings for 2 years and he was like, I'm going to cut back a little bit, you know, kind of was like, well, I don't think that that's okay. And he did. And he relapsed again. And then and it was when I was at the Finding Hope retreat, our first Finding Hope retreat.
I remember that. We were setting up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got the phone call from my oldest son saying he had seen something. And that first instinct is to call him. What are you doing? Why are you doing this? And I just called him and I said, is this true? And he said, yes. And I said, okay, well, the kids are leaving because like you, my boundary was you're not allowed to be in the home if you're drinking. Well, I knew he couldn't leave, so I had to make sure my kids were picked up because I was not close to come get them. And so I had friends pick them up. And didn't talk to him the whole time when every fiber in me wanted to leave.
You did. And I remember that. Mm-hmm. I had forgot about it until you just mentioned it. And I remember, like, we had just finished setting up. We had gone back to our rooms to change and to get ready for the retreat. And I don't remember if you called me or texted me or knocked on our door. And, like, I remember I was like, oh, my gosh, something's not right. Mm-hmm. And you did. Like, he's like, I want to leave him. And, you know, we prayed through it. And with four kids, right, like, at home, my husband's relapsed, you know. But you didn't. And that is just bravery and giving it to God is what I saw, and trusting God through that, and you know, and not stopping your life because of what they are or aren't doing.
Yes.
That you know, like, I'm in the right place. My kids are safe. Mm-hmm. You made sure your kids were safe.
Yes.
And you continue to do the retreat mm-hmm. and to get poured into and all of that. And I remember even that drive home. And it's just, we're exhausted, but just talking through it mm-hmm. and not just not talking through it. Like, we're going to talk through this as we get home. Like, what's yes. it going to look like as you take that step in?
Yeah, because I waited for our kids to come home till after I had gotten home and him and I could talk. Mm-hmm. Like, I wanted him to have a plan, because before I would have been like, well, you need to do this, you need to do this, mm-hmm. you need to do this to make sure you're staying sober. And I said, you need to have a plan. You can tell me what that plan is, but you need to have a plan and speak and talk to your sponsor about it. And he did. He went to a meeting that Saturday and everything. And I came home. We talked for a long time. And he got back, plugged back in to meetings and everything, was doing really good, and then relapsed again. And I thought it was like just one. His relapses were typically over the weekend, and he would be done. And I thought he was done that weekend, and I didn't know he had stayed in his relapse for 6 months.
Wow.
Yeah, like, you'd look back, how was I so stupid? How did I not see it? But looking back, there were signs. I just, walking on eggshells again, didn't want to bring it up, because then it causes, oh, well, you don't trust me, and all of those things. And so I didn't know, but I kind of knew a little bit. And then I caught him again. So that was in April, and then I caught him again in that October. Mm-hmm. And he was honest about it, and we were leaving in 3 days to go on vacation, mm-hmm. our family vacation. And so we told the kids, you know, what had happened, and our kids were very devastated, especially our boys. They were like, they couldn't trust him anymore.
Yeah.
And so we talked to them and said, well, Dad has a plan. He's going to get back into his recovery journey and all of this. And he did. He started his journey and all of that, like getting plugged into meetings, meeting with the sponsors.
Started working
his program. He was doing really good. And I went on a retreat again, the first one out of state.
North Carolina.
Yes. Yeah. North Carolina. And I had talked to him on the phone every day because there were storms here while we were out there.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. So I was making sure him and the kids were all okay, and had no clue that he had relapsed. And come June, he came home from work and he had been drinking. And I told him, I can't keep doing this. And he had no desire to be sober anymore. He even said that, he's like, I don't want to be sober. I want to drink. I can drink. And I said, well, you're not allowed to stay here. You have to go figure it out for yourself. And it's been hard, but I have my boundaries in place. I don't talk to him if he's drinking. He texts me, I don't respond. He's called me, I don't answer. Mm-hmm. I know what times of the day that he's drinking. Yeah. And so, and just stayed plugged into my recovery and doing what I need to do for me. And I never thought it would end.
Yeah.
Go this way. I thought he would stay sober, but he just doesn't want to at all.
Well, and we talked about on a previous podcast when Amber Hollingsworth was at our Hope Conference about how addiction can spread over to us. Mm-hmm. What you started doing through those boundaries and stuff, you said addiction is not going to touch me. I'm going to stay on my path, have my boundaries, and stay on my own healthy path, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And just to see your journey through all of this, and it's been, it hasn't even been a year yet. And just the healing you're doing through it all and through the relapse, and that you're talking about it. You're not just pretending like it didn't happen, and you're taking steps to heal yourself through it. And so I just thought, thank you for sharing that with, I know it's not easy. It's not easy to talk about the pain, you know, through it all. But I just want people, as they're listening to this podcast or watching it, is like, how do we get through a relapse? Mm-hmm. We've kind of shared our own journeys through it. And so I just want us to kind of talk through it. And we've kind of, as we've collaborated about this, kind of have five steps, mm-hmm. right, that we've talked about.
Yeah.
So why don't you start off with, what would you say one of the first steps through a relapse?
So his relapse, whenever I was gone to the first retreat, I knew step one would have to be don't blame. Mm-hmm. Don't shame or blame him, because that's not going to do anything. I could get on the phone, I could show up after the retreat, and I could say, I can't believe you did this. Why did you do this? All of the things. And it was just really, I knew I couldn't do that because they're already carrying that shame and guilt and already feeling very like low mm-hmm. at that point, that it just is not good to go into an environment and like, because it's going to cause conflict and arguments and stuff, no matter if you come in calmly or, you know, at them. And so it's just better to when it's calm to mm-hmm. enter in a conversation with them and explain how that relapse made you feel, and make sure you're not, you did this. When you do this, it may like just make
and
sure
it goes back to those positive I feel yes. statements we've talked about.
Yeah.
A while back about, I feel anxious when, I feel sad when, I feel nervous, I feel scared. All those feelings, mm-hmm. you know, I think that's a big thing. It's not, you knew better. I mean, we want to, but yes. we have to remember this yeah. is a disease,
yes.
you know, and like you said, I'm so glad you said it. Like, and when we talk to those in recovery, they do feel that shame mm-hmm. and it's hard for them to open up and share. And the fact that they do share, if they have shared that they're in a relapse, that's huge yes. for them, you know, and yeah. we have to remember it is a disease.
Yes.
Through it all. And, you know, one thing we didn't really talk about, so let's step back real quick. We don't want to just, having a bad day doesn't mean a relapse. And I said that
right.
already, you know, but if you start to see it, like do that prayer, like I said, Lord, and that's why I tell people, give me peace. And I've had those prayers before.
Yes.
I'm like, has my husband relapsed again? Lord, give me peace or open my eyes. There's times where I finally do have that peace. Mm-hmm. And then there, that one time when he did open my eyes to, and I feel like he opened my eyes at the appropriate time where I was in a good spot. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes I've heard one of our former staff members say, go to them and say, I saw or notice, which leads mm-hmm. me to believe.
Yeah.
Now, could they go and lie? Absolutely.
Right.
But it might also make them feel like it's a safe. If they don't feel attacked in it,
yes.
it might make them feel safe to say, yes, I am struggling, or I'm on a verge. I haven't relapsed. And we've talked about like when they're in that, when they get out of rehab and you start having those conversations, you can even ask them, how would you like me to approach it if I feel like you're on the verge of a relapse mm-hmm. or you have relapsed. So already having those tough conversations
yeah.
before it happens.
Yeah.
Like, don't just put those tough conversations to the side. You need to have those tough conversations.
Yes.
Because if it happens, you are more prepared and equipped
yes.
to have those.
Mm-hmm.
So step one, we talked about don't blame or shame them mm-hmm. in that relapse. The next step is, you and I both talked about, is those boundaries,
yeah.
right? In remembering that's around us mm-hmm. and it's hard. And like I said, I have someone else that's a wife and her boundary for a relapse at home was different.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, if he's drinking, but not drunk, you know? And for me, it's like, if you drink it. So it's like,
yes.
what? I don't feel safe in my house or I don't feel mentally all those things. Even if he's had one drink,
right?
Like that's me personally. That might not be you,
right?
You know, and that goes even back to moms and dads. Like, are you going to go? Maybe okay. You talked about your ex-husband when he relapsed at sober living,
mm-hmm.
and I hear moms and say, "Well, he relapsed. I don't know where else he's going to go." Well, I told my husband he had to figure it out,
mm-hmm.
and it's not. It's like, what is that boundary? If they were to relapse, what is your boundary? Like, are you going to pay for a hotel?
Right.
Are you going to let them back in your house for that 1 week?
Yeah.
You know, you've got to think through that. And just to remember, again, you're not going to stop what you're doing.
Right.
You're not going to go cancel that lunch or that dinner with a friend to go rescue them in that
yeah.
relapse.
Yeah.
And it's hard and it's not easy. And that's why this community is so important
yes.
to have that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, like I said, old Amy would have done this. Like,
yeah.
so think through, like, And it's okay. We talk about pause and pray. If you don't know what it is, that's the moment to pause and pray about it.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, making sure you have those boundaries in place and not to wait when you feel like it's coming on, but have them ready right now and communicate it with your loved one prior about that as well.
Yeah.
Anything you want to say about the boundaries?
Just you can let them know your boundaries or you don't. Like some of them can be ones that are just for you if you don't feel comfortable saying, like telling them that what they are, unless the situation comes up. I know a lot of times people are like, well, this is my boundary if this happens, this is my boundary if that happens, and that's a lot of information for them to carry. And so maybe just have one or two that you share with them, and then the other ones have that you know what they are.
And when you said that, made me think, like, we are planners, a lot of us. You and I are planners, huge planners, and we want to plan every scenario. You can't plan every scenario out. Yeah. And it's one of those is just, again, abiding, like we've talked about, to God and His will. And like we talked about on a previous, like, Lord, what do you want me to trust you in this situation? And to remember, like, you can't have 100 million boundaries.
Right.
Right. A boundary, you know, okay, I feel like my mental health is being crossed or my emotional health is being crossed. What does your boundary look like in that scenario as well?
Yeah, those are good. Yeah.
So what else? What's the next step? So we're not going to blame and shame.
Right.
We're going to have boundaries ready. And then what?
Step two is at Finding Hope, we say you must feel to heal. We were just saying this a minute ago. So acknowledge your feelings and don't stuff them or push them down or push them aside. Because, you know, when a relapse does happen, it can bring up a lot of feelings. It can trigger a lot of emotions that you had when they were in their active addiction that you know, you feel like you've healed from. But when that relapse happens, it can bring all of that back, and you don't want to stuff them down. You want to feel them, acknowledge them, cry if you need to. But ultimately, we call them hope givers in Finding Hope. Reach out to the person that you can talk to. Like as soon as my ex relapsed, I text Amy and I was like, this is what's going on. And I knew in that moment she was going to start praying, and she did. And then journaling is a really good one. You know,
you
that
journal
I love.
A lot. You even said yesterday, I need to journal about it.
I know. Yes. Yeah. I need journal and then ultimately pray, like pray about what does God want you to do through those feelings? How does He want to heal, like lead you through healing in that? Those are just a couple of them. Oh, my favorite too is counseling, a counselor. I see two counselors. And so, which has been key to my recovery this time around.
Yeah. And to remember this relapse, again, is not yours to fix. Yes. I love like praying. And sometimes I even talk about a God box or a prayer box. Like when you feel like you need to step in and fix or like you think you know the better path, write it down and put it in that box and give it to God and knowing and date it too.
Yes.
Knowing like, okay, I've given it to God. It's not mine to carry anymore. And that is so good. Like, and I love when we had that hope panel at the conference because every single person on that panel cried.
They did.
And they were, and it's like, yes, like it's safe. I cried on stage at the last day. And what do we always want to say when we cry?
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Don't be sorry. Yeah. Like God's given us those feelings and emotions to let go in a safe way. You might just need to cry into that pillow and let it out. I also just want to say, like, when you reached out to me and you texted me, I said, I'm here for you when you're ready to talk. I didn't immediately pick up the phone because sometimes when people reach out to us as well, like, yes, I wanted to fix my husband. Now I want to fix Darcy in this. But like when she's ready, she will. And she did. And I remember I was in my driveway talking to you before I went into my house, talking through it and listening to you through that. So maybe you're supporting someone going through it. Just remember, like, when they're ready to share more, they will. Let them share what they feel comfortable with.
That's good.
So we're going to feel to heal. And then, you know, you kind of said this and I did this too. And I don't think I mentioned it with Shane, but like, it's not my job to come up with a plan. It's you said it to your ex-husband and I said it to my husband at the time. I said, when you have a plan, let me know. And like, and so that's kind of step four, is encouraging them to get the plan, not for you to figure out the plan. And So when after my husband's relapse and he wasn't at our house for 5 days, we met for coffee. Mm-hmm. And he had already done all this work. This is my plan. And what's really cool, I might get emotional thinking about this, is like he wanted to get involved. Some of the things that he was lacking and he would admit to is he would go to AA. He would slip in and out. How many times do we do that at mm-hmm. church and oh, yeah. other things? But he started then getting a home group is what they call it. And he still does the home group, not every week or anything, but he still does the home mm-hmm. groups. And we host the home groups at our house. And it's kind of cool. It's also a little stressful, but it's kind of cool that these guys come into our house.
Yeah.
And it's on a Wednesday night. So when the kids and I come home from church, like it's just a nice, yeah. like open conversation we get to have, you know. And so he came up with this plan all on his own, because if it's my plan, it's not most likely going to get done.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He might try it. And that's why it's like they need to go to rehab. We talk about that rehab for themselves.
Yes.
Well, this plan needs mm-hmm. to be for themselves
Correct.
As well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then what's one of the most important ones too?
So I think this one is very key, is self-care. Because I've told you before, I was always doing everything for everybody mm-hmm. else, not for like our loved ones. They're supposed to go do their rehab, sober living, like all of their things for themselves. I was doing it for everybody else, my own recovery. And so this time around, self-care has been my biggest thing that I've done for myself so I can be the best version of myself in every area of my life.
So is self-care just getting my nails and toes done?
No.
So what does your self-care look like? Like, what would you do for yourself for self-care this week?
So what day was it? I make sure I run. I went and ran 2.5 miles. I don't remember what day it was. The days are we all.
Yeah, you're
you
good.
Know.
You're good.
So I went and ran one day. I try to run 2 to 3 times a week. Okay. And so I do that. I try to journal at least a couple times a week if I can at the end of the day. I listen to worship music, but also not worship music, you know, just to decompress. Mm-hmm. I do go to counseling, you know, like some people think, well, is that self-care? For me, that is. Like yeah. I have to do that. And ultimately, like starting my morning with my devotion every day, like, and a lot of times that's just listening to it. I got stuck in that box of, oh, I have to have my Bible out. I have to read it. I have to highlight it. I have to journal everything mm-hmm. that I read. And I'm like, no, God just wants me to hear what he has to say to me that day. And so I make sure I start my day with my devotion every morning.
So it's just those little things, mm-hmm. right? Those little things that can make a huge impact, because you do. So you're a single mom now with 4 kids. I mean, your oldest is married and out of the house, but mm-hmm. still, he's still your baby,
yes.
you know? And so you are having to make sure so you can pour into them mm-hmm. too, and to pour into the other members and
yes.
to pour into me, all those things. And, you know, I've said it on here before, but sometimes my self-care is 5 minutes in my driveway.
Yes.
You know, maybe the worship music's on, maybe it's off. My question is, have you ever driven, like, one thing is, I've driven with the music off before. Mm-hmm. My kids are out of the car. I might be just drop them off at practice or school. And I just will drive with my, in silence.
I actually did that today.
Did you really?
Yeah, I don't normally do it. I normally have music going, but I did it today.
And it's just kind of shutting yeah. off everything that's going on
yes.
around it. And it's raining here today.
Yes.
And so sometimes yeah. that's fun to just listen
yeah.
to the rain and, like, you know, all of that. But it's just remembering it's those small things that helps to fill your own cup.
Yes.
And I know it's cliche to say you have to fill yours before you can fill someone else. But it's so true. Like, 100%. You deserve it. And I think so many times we don't think we deserve it, that we need to be making sure everyone else is okay. Then we can. That's backwards.
Yeah.
We need to make sure we're okay. And then we can help those yeah. around us.
And I thought it was selfish for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I felt bad about doing it. But my kids see that I'm healthier than I was before. And so them seeing that and them saying that, like, I don't ask them those things. They say that to me. And so it releases me of that guilt of it being, quote unquote, selfish.
Yeah. So just to recap real quick. So when we feel like maybe a relapse has happened, or, you know, is we know for sure or we don't know for sure, you know, it's just to, let's just recap is, mm-hmm. so the first thing is we're not going to shame
right.
and blame them, right? And then we're going to make sure, we're going to think through our boundaries. What were our boundaries in that situation? Mm-hmm. We're going to allow ourselves to feel whatever emotion. Maybe it might be, maybe you don't need to cry. Maybe it's the anger. Maybe you need to punch, not the wall, but punch a pillow. Like sometimes I've told my kids that you're angry, go punch your pillow. Like get it out. You got to feel that. And then encouraging our loved ones to come up with their own plan and not for us to. And then making sure we're also taking care of ourselves through some self-care, whatever that might look like for you. And so we have to remember that relapse is not the end. And it doesn't mean that treatment failed, sober living failed. We just have to remember that addiction is a chronic disease, right? And that it has to be treated every day. And, you know, you might even look at it, and this, some people are going to be really angry to hear this, so... But it's going to be true. Like relapse can be seen as an opportunity to learn and to grow. And I can see that through my husband's relapse, like seeing his growth, but also mine. But I've seen it through this last year. You're growing and learning through it. No matter if your loved one got sober again or not, like you are being, you're okay and healing because of that. Any last words?
Just you're going to be okay no matter what happens. Like I know we can get focused on the what ifs, but just focus on like you're going to be okay. Like God's there with you. Make sure you're plugged into a community to, that supports you no matter where your loved one is at.
Absolutely. And no matter what, like if there are 3 years sober, Finding Hope still for you. Like if I hadn't been part of Finding Hope for that 5 years, that relapse would have looked a lot differently as well. So that's so good. So we like to leave with a challenge. And so today I want to challenge you. Do you have any boundaries in place for if a relapse were to happen? If so, write it out. Have it ready. And if you don't, think through it. Reach out to Darcy and I, and we can, we can't make that for you, but we would be happy to talk through it with you. And then my next question is, what is your plan if a relapse happens? What... are you going to, just shove it down? Or are you going to call somebody? Are you going to call that hope giver like that Darcy was talking about before? So thank you guys so much for joining us this week. And you can learn more about Finding Hope at findinghope.today. But before you go, we would love for you to give us a 5-star review and share this on social media. And be sure to subscribe to this podcast for your next hope-filled episode. Thanks again for joining me, Amy LaRue, and Ms. Darcy Stevens on this episode of Finding Hope. And remember, you are not alone. It's not your fault. There is hope.